A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been engraving inventory IDs onto toolboxes and trestles with a Dremel, and he figured 3 seconds of work without a mask was no big deal. The next day, his asthma was atrocious. His question is basically, how does a burst that short manage to wreck my lungs? When do I actually need the half-face respirator with P100 filters versus a lighter N95? And is there a way to do DIY without triggering these episodes at all?
That gap between what feels safe and what's actually happening in the air is where this whole thing lives. You can hold your breath for 3 seconds.
Yet the lungs file a formal complaint the next morning. It's such a clean little contradiction. The brain says negligible. The biology says absolutely not. Daniel's in the middle of moving between apartments, so he's marking everything, and engraving is the nuclear option for inventory control. But the respiratory cost is real, and I don't think most hobbyists understand why a few seconds of spinning carbide on plastic can cascade into a full-day asthma flare.
They don't, and the reason they don't is that the hazard is almost perfectly designed to evade intuition. The particles you need to worry about are invisible. They stay airborne for hours. And each short burst adds to a concentration that never really clears if you're working indoors without ventilation. So the thing that feels like 5 separate negligible moments is actually one long escalating exposure.
Daniel even predicted your answer, by the way. He said he suspects the move is to batch his engraving into one weekly session outdoors with the proper mask. But he wants the mechanism. He wants to know why the short burst fallacy is a fallacy, and he wants a concrete how-to run-through that lets him keep doing DIY without his asthma benching him.
That's what we're going to trace. The particle physics of what a Dremel actually throws into the air, why N95 and P100 are not interchangeable for someone with reactive airways, and then the practical workflow redesign that makes the whole question of, should I mask up for 3 seconds, disappear entirely. The thing that makes this worth unpacking is that Daniel's experience isn't a weird edge case. It's actually the norm for anyone with reactive airways, and the gap between what people assume and what's happening physically is where most of the bad advice lives.
Most people assume the threshold for needing serious respiratory protection is something like sanding a deck for an hour, or working in a machine shop all day. Daniel's finding out the hard way that 3 seconds of spinning carbide on ABS can clear that bar.
Right, and that's because the risk isn't just about duration. It's 3 variables stacking on top of each other. First, the particle size distribution coming off that Dremel tip. At 10,000 to 35,000 RPM on plastic, you're generating a huge fraction of particles in the respirable range, below 10 microns, with a lot of it in the sub 2.5 micron band. Those are the ones that get past your upper airways and lodge deep.
Second variable is concentration buildup. In a closed room, those particles don't just vanish when the tool stops spinning.
Third is the individual sensitivity multiplier. Asthma means your airways are already primed for inflammation. The threshold for bronchoconstriction is way lower than what OSHA workplace limits are designed around. Those limits assume healthy lungs doing an 8-hour shift. Daniel's lungs are filing complaints at concentrations that wouldn't register for someone else.
The episode really traces 4 things. What actually comes off that engraving tip, and why you can't see the stuff that hurts you. What 95 versus P100 actually means at the filter level, and why that 4.97% difference matters more for asthmatics than for the general population. Then the psychology of the short burst fallacy, which is its own fascinating mess. And finally, a concrete workflow Daniel can implement this weekend.
The short burst thing in particular, it's almost a perfect trap. Your brain sees 3 seconds and files it under not a real exposure. Your lungs see cumulative particulate load and disagree violently the next morning. Let's start with what's actually coming off that Dremel tip, because this is where the intuition gap is widest. At typical engraving speeds, say 15 to 30,000 RPM, the carbide bit isn't just scratching plastic. It's mechanically ablating it. You're vaporizing and fragmenting material at the contact point, and the particle cloud that results is shockingly fine.
Invisible, which is the crucial detail. Daniel mentioned he figured 3 seconds couldn't put much into the air. That logic only works if he can see the hazard.
The particles that matter most for asthma are below 10 microns, the respirable fraction. And a huge portion of what rotary engraving on ABS or polycarbonate generates is below 2.5 microns. That's PM2.5, the stuff that doesn't just get into your lungs but lodges in the smallest airways and alveoli. You can't see anything below about 40 microns with the naked eye. So, I didn't see dust is genuinely meaningless as a safety metric.
Daniel finishes his 3-second engraving, sees nothing, thinks he got away with it. Meanwhile, thousands of particles per cubic centimeter just join the air in a 30 cubic meter room with no ventilation.
Here's the part most people don't internalize. Those particles don't settle quickly. A 1-micron particle in still air takes approximately 8 hours to fall from breathing height to the floor. So Daniel does his first 3-second burst at 10 in the morning. Those particles are still airborne at 6 in the evening when he comes back to do another quick mark. The second burst adds to the existing load. The third adds to that.
He's not doing 5 separate 3-second exposures. He's doing 1 escalating exposure across an entire day, and each burst spikes the concentration higher. It's like adding water to a bucket that has no drain.
That's the cumulative dose argument in a nutshell. And for someone without asthma, the body's mucociliary clearance system might handle that load without obvious symptoms. But Daniel's airways are primed. The EPA's indoor air quality research on asthma confirms that PM2.5 triggers airway inflammation at concentrations far below what OSHA considers an occupational exposure limit. OSHA's permissible exposure limit for respirable particulates not otherwise regulated is 5 mg per cubic meter over 8 hours. That's designed for healthy workers. Asthma triggers kick in at a fraction of that.
It's not just that Daniel's lungs are more sensitive in some vague way. The mechanism is that his immune system is already in a state of low-grade readiness. Introduce fine particulates, and the bronchoconstriction response isn't proportional to the dose. It's amplified.
In clinical terms, it's a nonlinear response. A small particulate load that would cause zero symptoms in you or me can trigger a full cascade in asthmatic airways because the mast cells and eosinophils are already hanging out near the epithelial surface waiting for an excuse. That's what makes the short burst fallacy so dangerous for Daniel specifically. He's not just wrong about the dose. He's wrong about how his body processes the dose.
Which brings us to the filter question. Daniel's got both P100 cartridges and what he calls F22 masks. I think he means FFP2, the European equivalent of N95. He wants to know when the lighter mask is enough. And the answer is almost never, for this specific task, indoors.
Let me give you the numbers from the NIOSH respirator fact sheet. An N95 filter captures 95% of airborne particles at the most penetrating particle size, which is around 0.3 microns. A P100 filter, whether it's N14, R100, or P100, captures 99.97% of those same particles. Both are tested at a flow rate of 85 liters per minute, which simulates heavy breathing during work.
The difference looks like 4.97 percentage points. That sounds trivial until you think about what it means for the particles that get through.
An N95 lets through 5% of the most penetrating particles. A P100 lets through 0.03%. That's not a 5% difference in protection, it's more than a 100-fold difference in what reaches your lungs. For the submicron particles that penetrate deepest and trigger the strongest inflammatory response in asthmatic airways, that gap is everything.
Here's a benchmark that makes this concrete. A single 3-second engraving pass on ABS plastic releases roughly comparable fine particle mass to 30 seconds of running a laser cutter on acrylic. Laser cutters are a known ventilation-required hazard. Nobody would stand over an unventilated laser cutter without respiratory protection. But the Dremel feels casual because it's handheld and quiet.
That comparison should reframe the whole thing. Daniel's treating the engraver like a pen that happens to spin. He should be treating it like a miniature industrial process that happens to fit in his hand. The P100 isn't overkill for 3 seconds of work. It's exactly the right tool for a process that generates respirable particulates at concentrations that will hang in still air for the rest of the day.
To be blunt about the N95 question, if Daniel were outdoors, doing a single quick mark with a breeze at his back, an N95 would probably be fine. The particles disperse before they can accumulate. But indoors, in a closed room, the N95 math doesn't work for someone whose airways overreact to the 5% that gets through.
The half-face respirator with P100 filters is clunky, yes. Daniel said he feels ridiculous wearing it. But that's the cost of the biology. The question isn't, do I look silly? The question is, do I want to breathe normally tomorrow? And the answer to the second question is, yes.
That's the mechanism. But here's where it gets practical. And weirdly psychological. Daniel said he got cocky. He knew the right thing to do. He owns the right equipment, and he still talked himself out of using it. That's not laziness. That's a cognitive bias with teeth.
The short burst fallacy. Humans are terrible at estimating risk from hazards that are intermittent, invisible, and delayed in their consequences. We evolved to detect a falling rock or a predator in the grass. Immediate, visible, obvious threats. A cloud of particles you can't see, building up across hours, causing symptoms tomorrow morning? That's basically invisible to the brain's threat detection system.
3 seconds feels like a rounding error. The brain files it under. Didn't happen. And then the lungs spend the next day filing a very detailed objection.
The trap is that each individual decision feels rational in the moment. I'm just doing one quick mark. It'll take longer to put the respirator on than to do the engraving. I'll be done before I even get the straps adjusted. All of that is true, and all of it is irrelevant, because the particles don't care how long the burst lasted. They only care that they're now in the air.
Daniel's current approach, intermittent no-mask bursts indoors, is the respiratory equivalent of taking one puff of a cigarette every hour and being surprised that lung function declines. The dose doesn't reset between exposures.
That cigarette comparison is uncomfortably apt. And the fix isn't willpower. You don't beat a cognitive bias by trying harder, you beat it by redesigning the situation so the bad option isn't available. So let's talk about that redesign, because there's a clear hierarchy of what actually works here.
From most to least effective. Top of the list, move the operation outdoors. Even a light breeze disperses particles faster than any indoor fan ever could. You go from a closed 30 cubic meter box where particles hang for 8 hours to an effectively infinite volume where they're gone in seconds.
That's the single biggest intervention, and it costs nothing. A folding table on a balcony or in a yard, a power strip, and you've eliminated the accumulation problem entirely. Second tier, for when outdoors isn't an option, local exhaust ventilation. A shop vac with a HEPA filter, the nozzle positioned right at the engraving point, captures particles at the source before they ever reach your breathing zone.
Third tier is the half-face respirator with P100 filters, worn for the entire session. Accept the clunkiness as the cost of breathing normally tomorrow. And fourth, only as a last resort and only outdoors, the N95 or FFP2.
Notice that N95 indoors didn't even make the list. For someone with asthma doing rotary engraving in a closed room, it's not a compromise position. It's just insufficient.
Daniel's instinct was right. Batch everything into one weekly session outdoors with the proper mask. The specific workflow, set up a dedicated outdoor station, a folding table with a power strip and a small bin for tools. Once a week, gather everything that needs marking. Put on the half-face respirator before you even pick up the Dremel. Do all your engraving in one 15 to 20 minute session. Store the respirator in a Ziploc bag between uses to keep the filters clean.
That last detail matters more than people think. P100 filters left sitting on a workbench accumulate dust and degrade. The Ziploc bag keeps them effective and extends their life. And the batching eliminates the entire just one quick mark. Temptation. There is no quick mark. There's only the weekly session.
Which brings us to the feeling ridiculous problem. Daniel said he feels kind of ridiculous wearing the half-face respirator. And I get it. It's a lot of gear for 3 seconds of work. But the reframe that actually holds up is, this isn't a medical device, it's a tool. Same category as the Dremel itself. You wouldn't feel ridiculous wearing safety glasses while using an angle grinder. This is the same discipline.
He already wears the respirator for drilling. This is just extending the same logic to a tool that spins instead of rotates. The alternative is an asthma flare, lost productivity, frustration, and potentially needing a rescue inhaler multiple times the next day. That's far more costly than a few minutes of looking like you take your lungs seriously.
For what it's worth, no one is watching. Daniel's on a balcony or in a yard, marking toolboxes. The audience is zero. The social discomfort is entirely self-generated.
I'll give you a concrete data point. I had a patient years ago, a woodworker with moderate persistent asthma. He was using an N95 for sanding and sawing and still needing his rescue inhaler 3 or 4 times a day in the workshop. Switched to a half face with P100 filters. Within 2 weeks, his inhaler use dropped to maybe once a day, sometimes zero. He told me the respirator felt clunky for about 3 days, and then it just became part of the routine, like putting on hearing protection or steel-toed boots.
3 days to stop noticing it, and the payoff is breathing. That's a trade I'd make every time.
Let's pull this into a rule of thumb that's simple enough to actually use. If the tool spins, rotary engraver, Dremel, drill, sander, and you have asthma, wear the half-face respirator with P100 filters for any duration indoors. No exceptions, no, just this once. Outdoors, an N95 or FFP2 is acceptable for bursts under 30 seconds, but P100 is still better, and since you already own the thing, just wear it.
The how-to run-through Daniel asks for. Step 1. Buy a dedicated half-face respirator if you don't already have one you're happy with. The 3M7500 series is the standard recommendation. Silicone seal, downward-facing exhale valve so your glasses don't fog. Pair it with P100 filters, something like the 3M291 or 7090 free. Don't mix and match brands for the cartridges.
Step 2. Set up an outdoor engraving station. Folding table, power strip, a small bin for the Dremel and bits. That's it. The whole thing lives near the door or on the balcony. The friction of setup is part of the protection. You're not tempted to do a quick mark indoors because the station isn't there.
Step 3. Batch everything into one weekly session. 15 minutes, once a week. Gather every item that needs marking. Do them all in one go. Respirator on the whole time. Step 4. Store the respirator in a sealed Ziploc bag between uses. Keeps the filters clean and extends their life. Step 5. If indoor engraving is absolutely unavoidable, rain, no balcony, whatever, run a HEPA air purifier in that room for 2 hours afterward. It's not a substitute for ventilation, but it's better than letting the particles hang for 8 hours.
Here's the bigger thing I want Daniel to hear. Asthma doesn't mean giving up DIY. It means engineering the environment to match your physiology. You're already becoming handier around the house. That's real. That's happening. This isn't a limitation forcing you to stop. It's a constraint that tells you how to proceed. Risk management is just another skill, same as learning hand technique on the Dremel.
There's a question that sits just outside the scope of what Daniel asked, but I think it's worth flagging. He mentioned he might get into decorative engraving eventually. Deeper cuts, different materials, maybe metal instead of plastic. And that changes the particle profile. Bigger chips, different chemistry, possibly different respiratory risks entirely. That's a future exploration worth doing.
It absolutely is. Metal engraving introduces concerns about metallic particulates, and deeper cuts shift the size distribution toward larger fragments that behave differently in the air. The protection calculus changes. But that's a conversation for when Daniel's ready to go decorative.
For now, the thing I want to land is this. Daniel's system, engraving inventory IDs, an app tracking which storage unit something is in, is brilliant. It's the kind of organizational thinking that makes a chaotic move manageable. Don't let a preventable asthma flare derail it.
The respirator isn't a symbol of limitation. It's the key to doing more, not less. Every time Daniel puts it on, he's not admitting weakness. He's choosing to keep building, keep marking, keep organizing, keep getting handier. The asthma doesn't get a veto.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 1860s, a naturalist in Tierra del Fuego documented a fungal mycelial network that appeared to actively avoid colonizing soil near a specific species of flowering plant, as though the fungus had mapped a territorial boundary it refused to cross, despite no detectable chemical deterrent in the soil samples.
The fungus drew an invisible property line and just...
Fungi with zoning laws. All right then.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you have a weird prompt about DIY, asthma, particle physics, or anything else that's been rattling around your brain, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com. We read everyone.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Go mark your stuff.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.